Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Karen Cam Radio Show. The intention of this show is to empower and inspire you to manifest the life of your dreams, whether it's radiant health, prosperity, loving relationships, or simply peace of mind. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Cam, author of the number one bestseller, Guide to Healing Chronic Pain, A Holistic Approach. And if you don't have a copy of my book, you can get the first six chapters free right on my website, karencan.com. And to put your name and email address, I will email you the link to download that excerpt and also my Fast Track Your Healing courses. And you know, these classes, originally there were five, and you'll hear on the radio show replay as I say five, but I've asked my assistant, Jennifer, to actually include all of them. So the entire Fast Track Your Healing program she is currently working on putting on the website. So once you sign up for, you know, on my website, you'll have access to all of those really cool classes. And soon we will be also be launching my very, very popular energy clearing and protection spray, which in my recent launch with From Heartache to Joy, I had a lot of great testimonials on how the spray worked in terms of decreasing, you know, symptoms of depression and anxiety, people sleeping better, noisy neighbors quieting down, kids being happier and doing their homework. I mean, it just went on and on, all these different things. So we're really happy to be able to provide that for everyone for free as a free gift just for being part of the community. So today's show is about alien abductions. You know, let's have some Star Trek music here. So you're probably wondering, okay, what the heck? Like, why are you doing an interview about alien abductions? Well, honestly, I didn't really know too much about the whole alien thing, with the exception of just really enjoying throughout my entire life shows like Star Trek and Star Wars and Close Encounters and you name it. You know, if it had something to do with the stars, I was just fascinated, and I really liked astronomy. Not that I know a lot about it, but I just thought it was really, really cool. And I was never really scared of, you know, the whole alien thing. I just thought it was really neat. And then, of course, now knowing that I have, you know, a past life as a, you know, as an alien myself, so now we call ourselves starseeds, I suppose, and realizing that some of the gifts that I have is due to that past experience, then I'm like, hey, you know, this is really, really cool. This is really actually helping people. And so actually one of the first forays into UFOs and aliens was my friend Bob. So I'll just call him Bob for, you know, everybody and, you know, friends of mine that know Bob, is he likes to vector UFOs, and he's very good at it. And, you know, when I hang around Bob, I'm always shocked and surprised why I can't see the big, huge UFOs that he tends to vector in with everybody else he hangs out with. I'm like, are they afraid of me or what? You know, but he has no problems doing that. And also, you know, friends of mine have had, you know, these alien-type experiences, much, much more graphic and vivid than I do. What I do on almost a daily basis is kind of work on clearing not-so-healthy alien intrusions and sometimes helping other alien worlds as well. But I really don't get to see them per se. I mean, I can sense that if there's a portal or a communication, but I don't see them with my physical eyes. So it's certainly not half as exciting as some of my friends who have seen them with their eyes. And one of them is actually on the show today, the author of The Messengers, Owls, Synchronicity, and the UFO Abductee. So Mike Quillen is an author, and he has a really awesome blog as well. And I'm going to have him tell you the website where you can get a copy of his book as well as his blog. He has a really great podcast, and he's been interviewing people from all over the world about their experiences about owls and UFOs. So there's some interesting connection, and he is really passionate about this. The book is extremely entertaining and really well written, and I love the, you know, the spiritual component, the, you know, why and how owls and UFOs and spirituality and God tend to be kind of all kind of wrapped up together. Now, alas, I have not had a lot of owl experiences personally, although I deal with what you would consider, you know, UFO slash, you know, alien stuff almost on a daily basis. But that doesn't mean there's a heck of a lot of other people out there who have had their personal experiences, and Mike is one of them. So he has collected a wealth of firsthand accounts in which owls manifest in the highly charged moments that surround some sort of alien contact. In fact, there's some of my patients, like literally patients that come to my office, that have had true, you know, spaceship alien contact very close by. They can describe what the ships look like, and it's fascinating, you know. And all I've seen is, you know, really, really far up, and I'll see, you know, the zigzag pattern or a little flash, or these little guys, and I'm like, come on, guys, come a little closer, you know. But it doesn't seem to happen so much for me and James, but it has for other people. So I'm really, really excited to welcome my friend Mike on the show. And if you are calling in and would like to ask Mike a question, we'll be unmuting the lines later on. The number to call in is 818-514-1190. Hit 1 so we know your hand's up and you have a question. Again, the number is 818-514-1190 and hit 1. And if you're international or you're doing this by online, I have opened up the chat window so you can go ahead and put your question in there for Mike as well. So Mike's open to all questions. You know, if he doesn't know the answer, he'll let you know. But he's been at UFO conferences. He's spoke and lectured all over the world. So he knows the stuff, and he's met a lot of people in the UFO community. So if you have some questions about UFOs or your own personal experience, now is the time to ask. Oh, somebody just put their hand up and ask these questions. So it's great. So with great pleasure, welcome Mike to the show. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. This is really quite the book. I knew you were a wonderful cartoonist and a graphic artist. I had no idea how good a writer you are, too. I mean, I was like, wow, this is really cool. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And I don't know if I'm necessarily a good writer. I have I really had to grit my teeth to write. It's so much easier to draw. You know, pushing the little keys on the keyboard is much, much different than pushing the pen on a piece of white paper. And so, yeah, so if it is well written, that comes from the sort of arduous process where I'd write and then rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. And that so the writing process was about 3 years on this book.
Well, they say that's about average for most people's book. But this is no small book. I mean, this is a pretty decent volume. And you have lots of pictures in here. I really loved, you know, the parts, the mythology part where you talked about the just in our pop culture. There's definitely some movies that you mentioned in here that, oh, I got to watch these. And in our history books, fascinating about the coin, you know, like the $1 bill that in this tiny corner, there's an owl there. And the connections between owls and aliens. I mean, I never knew. I'm honestly only gotten through half the book because my husband, oh, I'm blaming him, but it's not really his fault, but he wanted to read it first. I said, okay, you read it first, and then he never got around to it. So I wrestled it back from him recently, and so I'm on part four there. But in this book, you talk about your own personal experience about, you know, seeing – was it 5 gray, spindly, skinny aliens outside your bedroom window? So maybe we can start there and just go with, you know, what do you personally experience to get to this point where you're writing this book about alien abductions?
Okay, so the event you're talking about, that happened in the winter of 92-93, and it was either January or February of 1993, and I would have been 30 years old at the time. So I'm 54 now, and that event, I was living alone in a house in rural Maine, and there was a motion sensor light outside. And so I woke up in the middle of the night, and there's this bright light shining in the window. And I sat up on my elbow and kind of looked out the window. And the way the bed was positioned, it was right pushed up against the window, so there was no issue at all. I could just look right out the window. And what I saw was 5 skinny, typical gray aliens with the bald heads and the big black eyes, and they were walking towards the house. And it was felt eerily calm. I mean, the image itself, to see something that close, they were probably, I'm going to say 20 feet or less away from where I was lying. So they were right up next to the window, not quite next to the window. And I had an eerie stillness. I felt this eerie stillness where I should have been terrified, right? I should have like jumped out of bed and grabbed a baseball bat and locked the doors. But I didn't. I heard this very calm voice and whether it was my own voice or whether it was projected into me, I don't know, but this very calm voice said, "Oh yes, they're here. And now is the time to lay your head on the pillow and shut down." And that's exactly what I did. I just calmly laid down. Now, I probably only saw this for less than 30 seconds. And there was a distorted kind of reality surrounding this event. To say it was a dream would be incorrect. I do not think it was a dream. To say it was dreamlike would be okay, because there was something unusual about this. There was a hyper clarity to it. Things were powerfully vivid. There was an eerie silence. There was this kind of like the normal chatter in my mind had been shut off. There was the entire image was backlit by this bright light. That's what I sense woke me. And, you know, it would have been perfect, right, to see a landed flying saucer in the background. That's not what it was. It was just a spot of bright lightness, which was probably no bigger than a washing machine or so. And that was a little bit further into the yard back behind these five. So, and now one of the things I've done in talking to folks, you know, there's questions I'll ask. One of the questions is obviously when I talk to folks who've had any kind of UFO experience, I'll ask, you know, have you ever had any odd experiences with owls? And that's the germ of the entire book in a way, that question. And obviously not 100% of the people will answer yes, they've had an odd experience, but many do, and enough that there's a very real pattern. Now, back to that night, I calmly put my head on the pillow. Oh, I guess what I was going to say is that when I ask folks, you know, have you ever experienced like an odd, eerie stillness or quietness? And people say, oh, yes. And they'll go on to describe just exactly what I've described, which is actually difficult to put it in words, very palpable sensation. And I had one woman, I talked to her and asked her if she'd ever had this. I think she even volunteered it without me asking. She said that she'd had close encounters, like close contact abduction events. And she said that being in their presence was like, do you know when you take two magnets and you push them together and then they, you know, you
magnets,
push them together
right?
One way and they click together and you twist them a little bit and they're opposing each other. And there's this warbly sort of palpable energy, this kind of warbly kind of sensation. It's almost got a power to it. And she said, that's what it felt like being in the presence. It felt like being in between those magnets. It felt like this warbly. And when she said that, I knew exactly what she meant. She put it into better words than I could. So, so that was the account in, when I was 30 years old in 1992. The next morning, I honestly just dismissed it all as a dream. It was just too fantastical to take seriously. I just dismissed it outright. I said I had a crazy dream. I ended up drawing it not too much after that. Not too long after that, I ended up doing some drawings of it. But in the moment, the next morning, I never even bothered to go out and look and see if there was footprints in the snow. It just seemed ridiculous because what I had experienced was obviously not real. I've since changed my thoughts on it, and partially because I've had a handful of other experiences where I have once again experienced that eerie altered reality sense.
And is that what that particular incident you feel like an actual what we would call an abduction incident?
Well, I have no way of knowing. And I mean, one thought is I could go through hypnotic regression and try to retrieve memories. That's kind of a slippery slope there. It's, that doesn't prove anything. I may have memories that I am convinced are real, but there's really no way to know. So the answer is that event with those beings out the window certainly plays out exactly like the kind of thing that gets reported before a UFO abduction event. I have no memory of it, so I can't say yes or no. I would have to suspect strongly that there was some sort of contact event that night.
Wow. And so far, when I've read throughout the book, when you mention what the aliens look like or other people mention what the aliens look like, they come up with that typical, you know, gray, spindly thin, big head, black eyes. Of the ones that you have interviewed, you know, that are in relationship with owls, has anybody seen other types of beings that are not of that typical, what we call grays?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, the other ones would be, so there's sort of, you know, there's the you know, how to say it, like there's probably 50% of the reports that I'm just, this is very rough and not to be, you know, there's no real data to back this up. But roughly 50% of the reports or more are the typical gray aliens that you just described. The other percentage, the sort of big three that come in after that would be, you know, giant reptiles, you know, big giant like dinosaurs almost with skin tight uniforms and lots of big muscles and you know, scales and green and just like big giant reptiles. And the other one would be big giant praying mantises, you know, so like 8 foot tall praying mantises. I've heard that a lot. You know, like they basically can't stand up in the room because they bump their head, so they're hunched over. And I've talked to people who've woken up with, you know, big giant praying mantis standing over their bed that, you know, that's too tall to fit in their room, and it's pretty terrifying.
Wow.
And the other one would be what's referred to as the Nordics, or some people refer to them as the blondes. And these are like perfect, you know, handsome, usually taller than normal, but not unusually, well, let's say unusually tall, but tall enough that they could walk through a supermarket and you would just think, ooh, is that handsome tall person? So both men and women, you know, usually fantastically beautiful with high cheekbones and perfect hair and skin tight uniforms, like literally like superheroes, you know? And those, they would for the most part pass as human, except they play out as being almost too perfect. So those would be the remainders. And then after that, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, robots and little hairy dwarves and little blue trolls and like balls of light energy. And so there's the majority of the reports are the classic grays.
Okay, that's fascinating. Have you ever come across anybody that saw like 5-inch like aliens that look like aliens, like, you know,
5 inches,
like little tiny people? Yeah, five
I,
inches.
I don't remember, not right off the top of my head. I'm going to say no. That doesn't mean I haven't read about them. I don't remember anyone talking about them like that size. But you know, there's this.
Okay.
What happens? So the problem is that there's like a form of mind control that can take place in so it's very, and this plays partially into the owl sightings, where people will report seeing one thing. As one woman reported picking up a 6-inch tall owl off a road,
right,
and carrying it home in her car and then letting it go in the driveway. And she described something I've heard before where the owl, and she said there was an eerie silence, picked up the owl off the road. She got in the car and her kids were in the car, her two kids and her husband, and her kids were young at the time. And now they're young adults. And, you know, they would have been 9 or 10. And so she's riding home with a little owl in her lap, a little 6-inch tall owl. And she's talked to them recently and said, do you remember like when I picked up that owl on the side of the road or in the center of the road? And they're like, mom, we have no idea what you're talking about. And if I was a little kid and my mom picked up an owl when I was 10 years old, I would remember that. So that's interesting.
Yeah,
that they don't.
Exactly.
And she also said that when she set it in the driveway, when they got home, it stared at her. She stepped back. It spread its wings and simply lifted up and hovered into the darkness. And she described it, and I kind of was like, wait a minute, did it flap its wings? And she's like, I don't think so. I think it just opened its wings and hovered upward, which is, I mean, if an owl is standing in your driveway and wants to fly, it's going to have to go flap, flap, flap and
right,
take off. And that's not what her memory is. And she paints it with like, it was the most beautiful, mystical experience of, you know, of her life, holding this little owl and then letting it. And why she ran out in the middle of the road and just picked this owl up is, so there's a very odd story. So that's a little 6-inch tall owl as opposed to a 6-inch tall alien. But this is the problem when you get into these waters, it's very murky, like trying to untangle what may or may not be at play. And this woman is someone who's had a lifetime of UFO contact in the classic abduction,
mm-hmm,
you know, scenario.
Well, and what's fascinating to me that when you're writing in your book, The Messengers, is that so many people that the UFO or the owl contact or both have really like set them on a spiritual path, or really kind of pushed them on to, or it kind of changed their perception of reality. And I would say, for the most part, for good. I mean, yes, some people are scared, but it seems to be kind of a positive thing.
Yeah, I'm very cautious to apply positive negative from the people that arrived, often very synchronistically, you know, in my life. And I, you know, usually they reached out and contacted me. They would email me and I would get back to them and we'd have a dialogue. We'd talk. I would, you know, write up their account. I would send them their account, and then they would fact check it. And they would often make very, very good corrections, you know, that made the story more accurate. And then, so that process went back and forth. So I did that with, you know, I'm going to say hundreds of people at this point. The seemingly the majority of the people who have reached out to me and or who I've stumbled on and have connected with, their contact has been positive or transformative in just the way you said, that they've stepped into a more spiritual place in their life. They've changed and become more aware. They see reality as something different than they had framed it before these events. Sometimes these events don't have anything to do with the UFO. Sometimes it's only an owl, and then they'll have the same transformative experience. Now, there are plenty of examples of people who are, you know, I'm going to say traumatized. These experiences are frightening and dark and challenging and no easy answers, and they play out as something quite negative. The tables in this realm are weighted on the side of the positive, where these people have had spiritual transformations. It would be foolish of me to try to give a percentage, but for the people who I've interacted with, who make up this book and make up my research, it seems to be in the majority, the people who have had, you know, powerful transformative experiences.
Well, that is really, really fascinating. Now, in your book, you talk about how owls have long been part of many abduction reports. And people might describe seeing an owl, but then later it seems like it's something else altogether. So when you were doing your research, you know, what kind of owls or owl stories were you getting? And some of these looked, you know, seemed to be very unusual, like 4 feet tall owls, which I thought was fascinating when you first told me.
Well, so there's a term used in the abduction research. People who are doing UFO abduction research, and there's a lot of them out there. A lot of people are doing this research, and they will describe what's known as a screen memory. Now, here's a typical story, and I've heard this many times. Someone's driving at night, often alone. They're on a lonely road. They turn a corner. Up in front of them is a big owl standing in the center of the road. They pull right up to it. It's a 4 foot tall owl. It can stare at them above their hood. So they pull right up to it. It's looking at them with a big penetrating eyes. They're in the driver's seat. The owl staring at them above the hood. Now, there's no owl
That's
on
a
earth.
Huge
the
owl.
Biggest owl. You get the biggest owl and you get it to stand on its little tippy toes, and it's not going to be able to look over the hood. I mean, a big owl can be intimidatingly large, but they're not that big. And they'll just tell the story like, oh, yeah, I pulled up to this 4 foot tall owl. It's really strange. And then the story will play out like, well, I got home that night. My wife was, you know, didn't know where I was. And she's, you know, I was supposed to be home at 10 and I got home at 1. So there's somehow 3 hours of missing time, usually between 2 and 3 hours of missing time. And upon going through hypnosis, which many people have gone through this, they'll reexamine those events. And the hypnotherapist will say, now, okay, now, you know, describe this owl. They'll say, well, it's skinny. It's got a little tight-fitting uniform on. It's got a big black eyes. And it's got a big bald head. And so they'll describe something that sounds like the typical gray alien. Now, what the impression is that these aliens either are using technology or psychic means to project themselves, to project an image into the mind of the observer. And that image would be, one image is it of an owl. There are a lot of other things that people report, squirrels, raccoons, deer is very, very common. Dead relatives. Jesus actually gets reported a lot. You know, people say, yeah, I
really?
Woke up in the morning. Woke up in the
morning.
Jesus was standing in the middle of the room, you know. And so that actually is not uncommon. Dead relatives are, you know, so also show up. Yeah, I've actually heard Abraham Lincoln showing up one time. So, like, wait a minute, describe Abraham, like Abraham Lincoln with the big stovepipe hat and the beard and everything. And so,
wow, that is fascinating. And
but the majority, the overall reports are of owls. So, and the question becomes now. So, you ask a UFO researcher, an abduction researcher, you say, okay, you got any reports of owls in your research? And they go, oh yeah, I got lots of them. And then they'll describe just what I told you, the screen memory aspect. People seeing 4 foot tall owls on the side of the road, out their window, with the big penetrating eyes. Now you would, you ask the UFO researcher, why is that? And they'll say, well, you know, obviously owls look sort of like the big gray aliens, like the gray aliens with the big eyes, right? They've got big eyes. They're kind of menacing. So they put that screen memory in because it sort of matches them. And that gets told a lot. And there's no evidence of that, right? There's absolutely no evidence that that's why they show up as owls. That's just an assumption on the part of the research. It may be correct, but so I went and looked, you know, well, if why owls? And my sense is that there's an archetypal reason that might be that the owls played a role in our ancient folklore and ancient mythology, and those memories are embedded into our psyche as an archetype. And so when they present themselves to an owl, they're presenting themselves symbolically to us for some reason. This is just a line of conjecture I go down in the book, and it's proven very fruitful, and it's very fun to speculate on that. So that's the sort of the tone of the book, you know, struggling with that question, why owls? I must have typed, you know, a dozen times in the text, you know, asking why owls are showing up in connection with these strange events.
Well, and then you mentioned, you know, the names of some of these people with all these synchronistic events of their friends and things happening at the same time. One would see a UFO, the other would have an owl experience at the same time in different, you know, parts of the world. And their names would a lot often will have Christ or Christ, you know, or Chris in them. And then many of the other, you know, people, some famous people have the word owl in their name, like J.K. Rowling.
I got a letter from someone named... Name what's her name? Her name is, let me take a look it up. Her name is her last name is Owlet, right? which is a baby owl, right? Her last name is Owlet.
Wow.
And now also Owlet, you get a piece of paper, you write Owlet. So
okay.
That's like, so it's two words, Owlet. That's her name.
Okay.
She contacted me to tell me a funny owl story.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Well, and I got to tell you, when I was reading the part about the archetypal part, that part resonated the most with me. Like I felt there was, you know, because I think, like you said, very clearly in your book, look, I, you know, I'm writing all these stories down. I'm not like some scientist with a bunch of data with left brain proof. You know, a lot of this is my personal experience, questioning, wondering why. But I got to tell you, when I read that part about that archetypal, that felt true to me. And
oh,
it's
good.
One of those intuitive things.
And I'll tell you, it felt like I was a bell rang in my head when that woman. So this, the way that came about, okay, so there's a woman. She's a wonderful woman. You should interview her. She's great. She's a wonderful, big-hearted, soft-spoken woman. And her name is Jacqueline Smith, not to be confused with one of the Charlie's Angels from the 1970s. Yeah. And so she wrote a book on channeling animals. So she channels animals, and she's channeled like a turtle and a dove and a dog. And one of the things in this book was an owl. And I've met her a few times at UFO conferences. She's a graceful, wonderful person. And so I contacted her and said, you know, listen, I want to ask you some questions about this owl thing. Cause I got her book, transcribed the owl chapter, which is fascinating. You know, so she's basically walking down a path day after day, seeing this owl. And then finally she said, okay, would you, the owl staring at her, and she looked up at the owl and said, you know, like, I would like to talk with you. And the owl said, okay, let's have a conversation. So she had a conversation, transcribed it, and that became the owl chapter of her book. Now we talked and went back and forth, and she's also, I said, what are you working on now? So I'm working on my new book. And oh, what's that about? It's like, oh, my UFO experiences, my abduction experiences. So here's an abductee channeling an owl. And when we were talking, I kind of was like, you know, like, hey, I, Like, I'm totally lost in this stuff. And if you ever see that owl again, you ask it for me. Yeah. What is the connection with UFOs and owls? And there was this sort of pause in the conversation. I'm so glad I recorded this conversation. There's sort of an odd pause. And she starts talking, and her voice is getting a little halting, and she's talking in kind of a different cadence. And I realized she's channeling. And she started talking first person as if she was the owl. And what she said, and I'm doing this from memory. It's quoted in the book. And it's very beautiful, better than I'll do it now. She basically said, the owl is an archetype, and with it, it brings archetypal energy. So when you are seeing the owl, you are not seeing just a bird, you are seeing the symbol, and we can know that symbology at an unconscious way, and that it is playing a role, that is the purpose of the owl. And then she went on to say that the owl is a, like, seeing the symbolic, seeing the owl before a UFO abduction lessens the trauma. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's I'm paraphrasing what she said. But when she said about the archetype, I mean, like, you know, all of a sudden all the gears just like clicked together, right? So before it was like a broken watch that was kind of grinding away and didn't make any sense. And all of a sudden, click, all the gears set into place and the watch was running smoothly. And I was like, this is perfect. This, like, all the questions I was struggling with seem to be answered when you look at the owl as a symbolic archetype instead of just a bird.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I felt it, you know, definitely to the core. And I really, you know, appreciate the stuff that you wrote about the history and the goddesses. And I mean, I had no idea, like, how often owls were part of the culture, like, so far back. And yet when you talked about the, you know, shared what she shared about the archetypes, it wasn't even reading what she said that felt, I think it was just the whole chapter. Like, I just really felt like, oh yeah, this is close. This is the truth, you know? So that was neat. I just wanted to let everybody know, if you wouldn't mind sharing what your website is, where they can get a copy of the book or listen to your podcast or read your blog, that'd be great before we get to questions.
Great. So my name is Mike Cleland. And just if you type that in as all one word, MikeCleland.com, the last name is CLELLAND. It should come right up. MikeCleland.com. That's a site where it will take you to where the book is, where the blog is. And I did some audio interviews for a while, and those are all posted there. So that would be one easy way to do it. The other easy way to do it is just to Google UFOs, owls, and Mike, and it'll come up. Yeah. Believe me, that was what it's sort of like I kind of realized at a certain point that, like, if anyone in the world had an experience with UFO and owl, like, oh my gosh, you know, you're in like Finland, right? And you have an experience with UFOs and owls, and you type in UFOs, owls, and you hit search, my name comes up. But not only does it come up, it comes up like the first seven or eight things. So, so if someone had this experience, they're going to find me. And so I've been sort of at the receiving end of these stories. It's been remarkable. But yeah, so it's very easy to search that out. And the book is titled The Messengers, and you can from that same MikeCleland.com, it'll very easy just take you to a place where you can order the book. My preference is that you just go into your local bookstore on the little main street, if you still have one, and ask them to order the book for you, because then it'll keep that bookstore afloat and save the shipping charges.
Aw, great. Yeah, great advice there. So if you have a question of Mike about either, you know, your own personal UFO experience or anything about owls you'd like to ask him, or about synchronicity in owls and aliens, whatever, the number to call in is 818-514-1190. Again, it's 818-514-1190. And just make sure you hit 1 on your keypad now so that I know that your hand is up, because we have a whole bunch of people on the call. But if you don't hit 1, then I won't unmute you, because I'll just assume you're just listening in. Same thing with all the folks that are logged in on the chat as well. You can feel free to write any questions on the chat of Mike, and I'll just share them with him. So we have someone here. I'm going to tell Mike the last 4 digits of your phone number so we can unmute you. So it sounds like somebody from my home country. So area code 416. Hello.
Hi, Karen. Hi, Mike.
Hi there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. What's your first name?
Alexis.
Hey, Alexis.
How are you?
Good.
So
what's
I have
a question?
Well, I have two questions. One is, why do you think they abduct us? Is it just for nefarious reasons, or do you think there might be something positive to it?
Oh, great question.
Yeah, you got that's a 6-hour answer, but to answer that completely. The correct answer, and the only answer I can really give with complete honesty, is I don't know. There's many ways to look at it. My sense is some researchers see this as very bleak and very dark. And I am not finding that in the research. The experiences themselves can be quite terrifying. But I've just talked to so many people who have had, let's just say, a transformative experience, or let's just say it set them off on a different path, a spiritual path. It would be easy to say, you know, oh, I talked to 10 people that had the benevolent, beautiful, positive experience. So that means it's a benevolent, beautiful, positive reason they're here. Then it doesn't take long before you talk to 10 people who have had dark, negative, traumatic experiences. And then you would have to have just the opposite answer. The answer is, I don't know. If they're here, this is something I've struggled with. If they're here, all I can say is that it is probably important. The reason that they are here, it is important. I don't understand what it is. I can't give you a good answer. But if they're here, my sense is it must be for an important reason. They have an agenda. I might be to make hybrid beings. It might be to enslave mankind. It might be to usher us into a grand, new, benevolent future of mankind where we're all telepathic. I don't know. I mean, all of these things get talked about within the UFO subculture. But my sense is if they have an agenda, something important is at play.
Oh, thank you. And I guess you wouldn't know how to make them stop coming, right?
Well, there's people who say that there's, I mean, you know, I mean, if so here's a question for you. Are you having these experiences?
I know I've been abducted. I've seen a UFO. When I had a past life regression, not even related to that, that came up that I was on a table. Do I have a conscious recollection? No. But there's been other things, too, that have happened where I've had dreams and you know, then you start to, you know, put pieces together. So I know I have been, but I can't. Honestly, I don't have a conscious recollection.
Okay, then I Now, there are certainly people who say, you know, you can utter the name Jesus and in the name of Jesus, and then they'll stop the thing. And actually, I've heard some folks make a pretty forceful case that that works. Other people say, oh, no, it doesn't work. I don't have any way of saying how to get them to stop. What may work, and I have talked to some people who have said as much, is they will simply ask, you know, will you stop? Can you please stop having these contacts? It's not working. It's not working for me. It's not in my best interest. Will you stop? And if they do, if you do that in meditation or make a like a real attempt to say it. I mean,
sincere.
Basically,
yeah.
The way.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
I was
just,
definitely
going to
try that.
Go
and my last question is,
say it aloud.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Leslie.
Okay, I think that we were, you know, how do you pronounce it? I forgot. Anaki you know, the people that first
Anunnaki,
supposedly
yeah.
seeded us. Do you think that was the Norwegian ones?
Oh, this is I can't answer that. I'm not really well versed in the ancient lore of that.
Okay.
My sense is that the Anunnaki probably existed some other the Anunnaki would be according to like the Zechariah Sitchin, and then Nick Redfern wrote a wonderful book called Bloodline of the Gods where he goes
just,
in
just finished reading that yeah
I thought that was great. I'm in that book. I don't know if that, I, it's fairly funny because I when I picked it up and I was like, hey, wait
are
a minute
you really
Like, it talks about owls in the book there. Yeah. And I'm A negative. So I have the Rh negative factor. And I've met Nick a few times, and Nick actually did the initial, the author, Nick Redfern, did the initial content editing of the messengers, and was very helpful. Gave me some great feedback. I think his summation in that book is better and easier to digest than what Zachariah Sitchin has written. You know, so he's working from Zachariah Sitchin. I think it was easier to read Nick's book than
Very easy to read. Yeah, the book is very easy to read. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, good. Yeah, and so I think that he's very good at not like when he's speculating, he says he's speculating.
No, I enjoyed the book very much, actually, so much so that I know I'm blood type A, but I'm definitely going to call my doctor to see if I'm negative. So it was a very intriguing read.
You know what you can do as far as – I've done this myself. There's a little test you can get, and either they can order it from the drugstore. You can just go online and get a little what's called a blood type test, and it's this little card. You prick your finger, get a tiny drop of blood, read the instructions, and there's a little card. You put your blood on a little card, and then the blood will coagulate in a certain way in these four little circles, and then you have a little key, and so you can test your own blood type at home. It's about $9.
Get out, really?
We have that. I have those in the office. It's the Blood Type Diet, the author of that. Yeah, he made those commonly available so that our distributors that sell supplements, they actually sell those for exactly what he said, about $9 or $10.
Oh, okay. I'll definitely get that then. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So thanks, Alexis, for your question. Awesome.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye now.
Okay. All right. Let me just mute Alexis here. So if you have a question for Mike, just give us a call at 818-514-1190. Again, 818-514-1190, and just hit 1 so we know you have your hand up. And to get Mike's book, you go to Mike Cleland. com, so MikeCleLland.com, or you can just Google Mike Owls and UFOs and you'll see it right there. Oh my goodness. So let's see. I have another person here with area code 412. Let me unmute you. Hello.
Hi. Hi, this is Pat. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure. Hi, Pat. What's your question?
Yes, so I got on late, about like 25 minutes, and I missed your talk about Rh negative, but I happen to be Rh negative, so I was just curious what that meant.
Oh, yeah. So there's some debate in the UFO circles what this may or may not mean. Some researchers say one thing, some say another thing. But now, within the pool of the American public, about 15% of the American public have what's called a Rh negative as part of their blood type. So there's A, AB, B, and O. Those are the four. They're the only four blood types you can have, and each one of those you could have a negative sign after. So there's technically 8 different blood types, but only 15% of the population in America, varies across the world, but 15% in America have the negative behind their their blood type. This becomes important if you have to have a blood transfusion and things like that. If a woman is pregnant and you know the blood type of the parents have to be factored in, or there's an issue with the health of the child. Excuse me. So when interviewing people who have had UFO contact, this gets very gray, right? Because how do you know who's actually had it and who's answering the questionnaire properly and such? But some researchers will say that it is about 65 to 75% of the people who claim UFO contact are Rh negative, where 15% of the normal population is Rh negative. So there is a statistical blip on the, you know, so if you, but that does not mean, so, but still, if you are not Rh negative, if you're Rh positive, you can still be a UFO abductee. And if you're Rh negative, that doesn't make you a UFO abductee. So it's just a, it got, there was, it's a, I'm very cautious because it does kind of lead you down this blind alley, and it's, there's a lot of information and not much conclusion there. So that's the RH negative, as simply as I can put it.
Interesting. So they just have found some commonalities among people, and that was one. There was a greater percentage that were RH negative that happened to be, have experienced abductions.
Yes. Yeah, it's a different percentage than the overall cross section, and other researchers say they have done the same, you know, sort of crunching of the numbers with questionnaires, and they say they get 15% of the abductees are Rh negative, which is exactly the normal population. So it's a murky thing. I'll go back to that book by Nick Redfern where he covers it very well, the issues of the Rh negative factor.
Interesting. I don't necessarily have any memories of having experiences. I just, that's interesting though. Who knows? Maybe
well,
that's why I was drawn to this call.
Yeah. And oftentimes people, there's like, if you Google it, it's kind of a bottomless pit in a way, just trying to do your research that way. But, you know, there's some people who claim that Rh negative people tend to be more psychic.
Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting too. Do you have any other questions, ma'am?
That's all. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you. Okay, we have another question from, let's see, area code 949. Do you have a question for Mike?
Yes, I do.
Hello.
Hi, this is Anna. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Anna. Good, thanks.
Hi.
What's your question?
Good. My question was, well, you and I talked about me being a light, being in my last life. So does that mean that you are more likely to be contacted or not? And I only had contact one time when I was young, and we were in Taos, New Mexico, which everyone has contact in Taos, New Mexico. but it's just kind of like the way it is there. But I did feel that same kind of, like a voice was projecting through me. And to
oh,
me at the same time.
Do you have any
yeah.
more details of that particular contact you could would be willing to share with us?
Yeah, they. It was a man's voice, and he told me that I would have the answers to all the questions I ever had about life, and that they were
wow.
right in front of me, and that I would have all of them. And I was like, wow. And then. He disappeared.
So
I mean, the voice
you actually
just
saw
left,
a man?
So,
or you saw the...
No, I didn't see a man, but I mean
oh.
his voice disappeared from my head, so then he was just gone, and it was like it ended. I wasn't sure if I did something to make that not happen, or it wasn't really clear to me why it ended so abruptly, but it ended quite abruptly.
And why did you think that was alien?
Well, we were in a car. I was with three other people. No one else heard anything. And it was pouring rain, and we were driving down a muddy road. Couldn't see anything. I mean, it's just black night, you know, just so much rain coming down. There wasn't much light even from our headlights. So, but I could hear it very clearly in my head, and no one else heard anything.
Fascinating. Yeah, Mike, what do you think?
Well, here's my question. So how did you get the knowledge that you feel that you're were a light being in a previous life?
Oh, because I told
him. We were testing that, yeah.
And
yeah.
then we had a private session, so that's what we
okay,
ended
so,
up finding out.
So, you know, if following that line of thought, I mean, that, and I've talked to a lot of people who have come to the conclusion that in their previous life, they were not of this earth. They were an alien. They were from another realm. They were had volunteered to come here. And that's pretty, I don't know how to say it's common, but I've certainly talked to a lot of people who just assume that, and because of their experiences, as well as their memories, as well as being told that, whether, you know, during a contact event or whatnot. Now, so here's a question for you. What are you doing in your life right now? Like, what type of work? What type of...
I'm a geologist.
Okay.
I'm a geologist, and I sing, and I write, and I cook a lot. I do
okay.
everything I can to try to stay grounded. I eat.
Okay.
I don't. I'm not able to
ground,
eat like a lot
right
of vegetables. Just only vegetables. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I'm actually
okay.
digging a hole right now. Yeah.
So that's interesting. I mean, I ask if you were doing any kind of healing work or something like that, which is very common with people who tell of these types of experiences. I actually know a handful of geologists that have these experiences.
Yeah, I do. I do some healing work with the patches. I have people with the light patches that Dr. Ken works with as well. I have people just kind of come to me and tell me things, and I know I can help them. Sometimes I decide they'll be able to hear me and I can help them, and sometimes I decide I should be quiet because it's just not always, I don't know if it's a fear of being exposed, but it's, I think just sometimes if someone's not ready to hear something, it's best to just let it be.
Right.
And, and just, not to scare them or, yeah. So I do a lot of light healing and I love it. It's probably the most rewarding thing I do. It's wonderful.
Well, that's important to know. Yeah. So I would say, I don't know. So you've been given clues, whether, you know, through the session with Karen, as well as through your memory as a child, where your knowledge will be revealed somehow, or it'll come to you. And the only reason I'm asking about the healing thing, if you're doing healing work, is that certainly was a pattern in the work that I was doing. People who are doing Reiki healing or some sort of hands-on healing, or working as sort of therapists and such is very common in the, you know, people who've had direct contact. That
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean that there's not, you know, bankers and lawyers and cops and stuff like that also having these experiences and housewives and
right.
geologists.
I did a lot of healing on my mother as a child, and I got, I didn't know how to manage I didn't know how to filter out other people's energy and how, so I just became too empathic to decide to pursue that as a full-time thing. It was just more than I could handle, especially with my mom.
That's very interesting.
More than I knew how to manage at the time.
The empathic thing is very, very common. So that's interesting you say that.
Yeah,
yeah,
I still would like to know how
really
to build
common.
A better filter.
Well, you know, I think that's, you know, I and you mentioned this book, Mike, in your book, Dolores Cannon's book, or books. One of my patients actually gave me the Three Waves of Volunteers. As she says, well, she says, I didn't really get into this book that much, but maybe you would, you know. So I thought, okay. So I'm reading through it, and I had no idea what it was about, but I, you know, reading through her book, and unfortunately she has since passed away, so I can't ask her directly, but apparently somebody channels her, so I suppose I could ask that person. But every single alien a story that she has in hypnosis, not once did she write about anybody who had, once under hypnosis, of course, had any so-called negative experiences. Like, even if they had implants or something like that, it was like for a positive thing. And, you know, when I was interviewing Michelle Walling from in5d.com, about this, because she knows the channeler for Dolores Cannon, she said that maybe Dolores was here on Earth to be like the, you know, the like the Pollyanna version of, you know, alien contact versus everything we've seen in Hollywood and the scaring and all the, you know, people freaking out about it. And so she's like, you know, showing us the opposite positive aspects of being contacted by aliens. So I think this might be relevant to Anna because, you know, she has been a light being. I've found a lot of people that are high vibrational light beings have a really hard time physically in their bodies. And it's almost like they don't know how to be that dense. And I don't mean that in a, you know, bad way. You know, they just like,
yeah.
I'm so used to love and every, you know, just we share everything and you could just, you know, heal in a snap kind of thing. So now you're in this dense physical body. It doesn't work like that. So, Mike, do you have any thoughts on Dolores' work and how that, you know,
I met Dolores a couple times over the years in the conferences, and I had a crazy synchronicity when she just right after she died. This is okay. So, someone knew I was doing that. In the book, I recount, Dolores is one of the people who had the experience of the 4-foot-tall owl looking over her car. This happened right. And this is, so one of the questions I asked people, you know, they said, oh, I had a UFO experience. I'll ask the normal stuff. What time was it? You know, how big was it? What did it look like? And then I get the meat of it to me is like, what was going on in your life right before this? How did your life change after it? You know, those are the questions I'm much more interested in. Now, Dolores, when she saw the owl, she was just starting. She had just sort of dipped her toe. She was doing family therapy work and hypnosis work. Didn't have anything to do with UFO stuff, you know, quitting smoking and, you know, that kind of thing. So, when she did the work she just started meeting people who had the UFO, and she basically had to come to the decision like, wow, am I going to go down this path, this UFO thing? Boom. She's driving home from the meeting where she discusses that. She has the 4-foot-tall owl on the road experience. Afterwards, she completely immersed herself in the UFO stuff. Her stuff blends in and out of UFOs. I mean, that category is almost too small to encompass what she was doing. And then also I'll say that there are UFO researchers out there using hypnosis who are coming up with exactly the opposite conclusion of what Dolores Cannon came up with. That said, I think her books are fascinating, and I think her research is genuine, and I don't think she's exaggerating, but there's something about I think certain researchers can bring to them exactly the type of people that will, maybe right. It's just that will gel the best. But, you know, there's other researchers, a fellow named Dave Jacobs, who's got a very dark view of the whole thing. Bud Hopkins had a very dark view of it. And they were doing, you know, what I consider to be legitimate research. I think you have to, any researcher that Dolores Cannon, Bud Hopkins, you know, anyone, you have to understand that they're bringing their own filters in. They may be doing it unconsciously. It may be happening on a cosmic reason. There may be like a funny magnet where they're attracting exactly the people that are going to deliver the message that they need to hear. So there's some sort of symbiotic relationship, perhaps. I've heard Dolores say that many times. Oh, no, I've never had any kind of negative thing ever show up in any of my research. And I think that's interesting because I've had a certain percentage of negative things show up. So I think that there's all that said, I think her books are fascinating. I think that book, Three Waves of Volunteers, is one of the books I would recommend.
Yeah, I actually liked it because it helped me give a different perspective. And although prior to that, I only was thinking of all the negative things that, people interfering with my patients and removing implants and different kinds of thought control and releasing them and all that kind of stuff. And then I realized after reading her book that there are some of these people who are here to change the world, to help others ascend, but they lose their memories when they come into a human body. And then it made so much sense because there have been a handful of my patients that this makes total sense with, like, why they're struggling, you know, so much. And then after we kind of, once they really realize who they are, then some of their natural spiritual gifts really start to shine, assuming they accept, you know, their path and go deep and are willing to go there. One particular person, he says, you know, if it wasn't for my neck pain, I would never have sought help from you, and I would never have, you know, gone down this road. And I was always religious, but, you know, now he can see angels and he can talk to them. And I mean, he would said, I would never have gone there if it wasn't for this amazing pain I have. And partly because, we ended up finding that his higher self says, I'm sorry, but you actually agreed to do this. You agreed to hold this pain for the world, you know, and to help clear some of the dark stuff. So at least he says, well, I'm still in pain, but at least I'm more at peace with it. And that's kind of cool. So I really give her some credit for helping me kind of restructure my perceptions about that.
And that would be Dolores Cannon, giving Dolores Cannon credit.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, I give her credit for giving me a different perspective that sometimes.
Oh, that's what
you know,
I, yes. Okay. That's what I thought you meant. Yeah. That's what I just wanted to, yeah. Okay. And for me, in a way, I feel like this book, the act of writing this book, was so therapeutic. I feel like with the book done, that was 3 years of hard introspective therapy. A lot of this is my own struggles. So this book was wrestling with the demons of this experience, writing this book, and then coming out the other end with it as a calmer person. I don't think I'm not like perfect or anything, but beforehand, I was a very tense, I can still get this way sometimes, very tense, very troubled, I felt like I was suffering from the weight of these almost unanswerable questions. And the act of writing the book sort of liberated me from that. And I feel much calmer and much more at peace now.
Very cool. Very cool. Anna, do you have any other questions for Mike or myself?
I guess I was wondering, so do we always have to stay in pain, or does this become more, if the more work we do, do you gain more peace? Dr. Cam, or do you, does this get any easier?
I think it depends. I'll answer, I'll field this one from my perspective, Mike. I think it depends on what you came here to do. So, for example, I just launched, my program at From Heartache to Joy, and we decided to do a VIP, coaching program because there are some people with the exact, those kind of questions. And a lot of, I said, look, if you're an empath or a starseed and you're struggling, or you're really feeling like, what am I supposed to be doing here on Earth? What is my role? What's really cool, what we've been able to do, I know I've been doing one-on-one and private sessions, is just figuring out, okay, well, who, can we get the name of your higher self? And whoever it is, well, let's have a conversation and let's say, well, do you really need to do this anymore? And some people, it was a yes, but that's actually kind of rare. Like most people, source God says, no, you don't have to suffer anymore. And we're like, no, okay, now what? What do we need to do to shift that so we don't have to keep repeating that pattern if God says we don't have to do the hard way anymore? We've earned the easier way. And, that's what I've been working recently on for myself too, because a lot of my healings for the world and the galaxy come through my body. So, I'll feel pain in my body as I'm empathizing with, this big, huge planet, five times the size of Jupiter. That was 2 days ago. detoxing. I'm like, really? Okay, my arms are numb. What's going on? What's going on in the world? And having to find it's not even in our galaxy and, all that kind of stuff. And God says, yep, that's your job. I'm like, okay, I'll do my job. Do my job and I feel better. And other times it's not my job, it's not my job and it's some other thing and I just, I just punt it off to something else or say it's none of my business, I'm not going to get involved. So I think part of it is just that understanding the sophistication of knowing what is and what isn't something you need to do. And that takes time and experience, but also probably, some guidance as well, because if I didn't get to, connect with God directly, that would be pretty tough. Because nobody else could give me these answers. They were really tough. And it's great that some of the other healers can back me up. And I'll say, did you guys have this weird, whatever? And they'll be like, yep. Everything you said was exactly what I got too. And I was like, oh, phew. I thought I was crazy. Now I realize I'm not. So, yeah. So it is a little tough sometimes. And for the most part, most people don't have to keep, feeling the pain. But they do need to do definitely some deep work. And I don't know, Mike, if you've, seen a lot of people who are healer types, empathic, that really kind of struggle, that are also UFO contactees.
Well, that was one of the patterns that showed up in the research was, at this point, when I talk to people and they say like, oh, I'm going to have this UFO experience, I just write, Reiki right on the piece of paper and just like, okay, ask them, like, do you do Reiki therapy or any kind of hands-on healing or anything? And it's not 100% obviously, but it's a lot. It's a lot of people who just, I can't tell you how many people who are just like, oh yeah, then one day, this guy, he's a truck driver, he works for UPS and total blue collar, union teamster. And said, yeah, I got this inspired and now I'm a Reiki master. And it's like, he's not a Sedona, guy in a toga, he's, so there's a, this stuff shows up, this healing aspect shows up as part of the work. I mean, it's part of the research. And these are the people who are having the owl experiences too.
Yeah, interesting. And my sense on it too is that there are many people that go through this struggle because they're bridging that gap between, you know, being a light being and being a human, and whatever they figure out and do for themselves and heal themselves, and now creates positive or what we call new morphic fields and abilities for other people to do the same. So whatever you're doing for yourself, even if you're doing it just, you know, just trying to make yourself feel better, not even talking to anybody else about it, just by you figuring out how to heal yourself, you're actually creating an energetic blueprint for a whole bunch of other people, mm-hmm. countless people that you don't even know and may never even meet, to help tap into that morphic field so they can do it too. Just like Roger Bannister ran the first 4-minute mile and they said it was humanly impossible until he did it. And then within the next year, multiple people did it after he did it because he created that
right.
morphic field. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get that. Yes, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
We bless you because I know your job's hard.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great. So, Mike, this has been really cool. I don't think we have any other questions. There's lots of people on the line, but no questions right now. And I know we're past the top of the hour. And great book, The Messenger's Owl Synchronicity and the UFO Abductee. Again, you can get it at mikeclellan.com. Or like Mike said, you can go to your local bookstore and ask for this book, which is very well written, and I'm just really enjoying it. Mike, well done. And it's really hard, actually. You can't really tell when you're reading it that you know, it was really that hard for you to write. It really just kind of flows really well. So
good,
kind of
good. Well, that was.
Yeah.
I had a good editor, and as I said, I guess the only way I can describe it is I have to grit my teeth when I write. So, what I do is I write it, and
funny.
I just go over it and over it and over it and clean it up
yeah.
and streamline it, and just make sure the comma's in the right place. And so I'm not a very good, like the initial draft. Boy, just be glad you're not reading the initial draft.
Oh, that is so funny. Okay. Well, yeah, James is like, so how is it? I'm like, it's really well written. He's like, oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Well, good.
Well,
thanks.
Well,
that feels great because I did, I kind of set out and I said, like, damn it, if I'm going to do this, it's got to be well written. And it's got to be, and whereas, you know, one time I read, I think it was even Stephen King. He wrote like a little thing. It might have been in The New Yorker where he like, you know, the 10 things that a writer should always do. You know, like for a good writing, here's what you need. And one of them was, have you ever read a book and you're getting to that part where it just drones on and on and on, and you kind of want to turn the page and get to where the really interesting stuff is. You know, that stuff that kind of like where you want to turn the page, just don't write that stuff. And that was kind of that was when I went into it, I was like, okay, that's the theme of this. Like that stuff where someone wants to flip the pages and kind of like, oh, when is this? Like, I want to get to the real stuff. I just was like, okay, I'm not writing that stuff. I'm only going to write the real stuff that feels good. And then obviously I had to edit down, right? You know, so these people, most of the people I had talked to, you could write a novel about what they went through. And I had mm-hmm. to sum it up in a couple paragraphs. And so that hurt.
Yeah,
that was
tough.
Really painful to. And so that was actually in a way good because the framework was owls. So I could stick with the owl thing and then I could say, okay, well, if it isn't, you know, the core message isn't somehow owls, and then I can, but that was hard. That was super hard. People had amazing stories and I felt terrible, like, you know, chopping them down and editing out
well,
the stuff. I didn't, yeah. Oh, go
well,
on.
What's new? What's going on new for you? What do we have to look forward to?
Well, the next book that I'm working on, which is making me a little like antsy because I should have had it finished by now, is exactly what I'm talking about, where these I had some leftover stories that could not fit in this book. The book's nearly 400 pages, and the last thing I wanted to do was add an extra 100 pages of really cool, long, complicated, mixed up stories where the story just has this crazy, like, there's one UFO researcher, her name is Ann Streber, the wife of Whitley Streber, and she said, she has like a, she called it her BS detector. You know, she said, if someone tells, here's, you want to know how I can tell if a story is real or not? If someone tells me a story and if it's not weird, I don't trust it. So there's something
yeah.
about these stories that are so weird. And so that was what I collected. I collected a bunch of these long, complicated, mixed up stories, and they kind of have a absurd logic to them by the time you put them all. So there's about 16 of them so far, and it should read like a book of short stories. And it will be it's called The Companion to the Messengers. So it's meant to be, you know, side by side on the bookshelf.
Okay. Again, it's
vowel stories, but that are each, you know, and I'm not doing much editorializing in these stories. Mostly it's just letting the people speak for themselves, and I'm writing up their accounts.
Yeah, oh, that sounds cool. Well, here, and Anna says, thank you, Dr. Can. Thank you, Mike. I very much enjoyed learning about your research experience, and thanks for your input. So she just typed that into the chat. Great, Mike. Well, we look forward to that book. Thank you so much for your time with us today, and you've definitely opened some people's eyes about UFOs, and you've a lot of experience. I know you travel around and do lectures and are in conferences. You're in contact with a lot of people and very well read, and I'm really not, you know, as far as the UFO stuff. I just deal with whatever comes up and healing that I need to deal with. But then I'm like, okay, if I don't need to know the details, then I just don't ask, you know, just do the healing. So this is great to have you as a resource. Thank you so much for spending your time with us, Mike.
Great. It was a delight.
Awesome. And thanks everyone else for listening in. Until next time. Bye, everyone. Bye, Mike.
Bye-bye.